Lake Effect continues now on WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Empathy is one of those values we're taught as children. It's the idea of imagining yourself in someone else's shoes and using that sense as a guide for how to treat other people.
But as we get older, empathy is sometimes easier said than done. In the end, what difference does empathy make in the grand scheme of things? And how can we reconnect with it? Writer Roman Krznarek sets out to explore the concept of empathy in a new book called Empathy, Why It Matters and How to Get It.
He talked with Lake Effect's Dan Harmon about where he sees empathy reflected in society today.
Sorry to say that empathy in America is in free fall. There's great evidence showing that empathy levels have dropped by about 50% in the last three decades, the steepest decline in the last 10 years. And at the same time, we're seeing a rise in narcissism and online abuse, particularly in the digital world. And of course, it's really difficult to measure things like empathy, but all the evidence is showing that we're becoming more and more selfish and individualistic.
I've read an article called Facebook is for Middle-Aged Narcissists, which I think was quite amusing. Do you think that these things are tied together, the rise of narcissism and self-interest and then the decrease in empathy? Why can't they coexist, if so?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's several studies showing that the more Facebook interactions you have, the more narcissistic you're likely to be. And it's a sorry state of affairs, really, but a lot of people are using social media as a way of shoring up themselves. People are constantly updating and perfecting their online profiles. But you would think that actually digital technology would have great potential because it's an opportunity to try and connect with people from different cultures in different countries. You know, 2.7 billion people are on the internet. But unfortunately, we still haven't become very good at using technology to make emotional connections. You know, how many of us can really talk about our deepest feelings very well in 140 characters of a Twitter tweet? You need to be a Japanese haiku poet to be able to do that pretty well.
Oh, that's another lost art right there. Okay. Given that you could say that Facebook or just, you know, we're picking on Facebook, but just having an online presence is narcissistic. But the other side of that would be, well, someone's got to be reading it. So you would think that people that are looking at other people's profiles or all these stories that are now available to us or whatever it is online, that we would be developing more empathy as a result of what's available to us on the internet. So why has that not happened, do you think?
I think probably because most social networking apps are designed for the efficient exchange of information rather than intimacy. And certain things like Facebook can be ways of connecting with people in a deep emotional way, but it tends to be other technologies which can help us do it. So, for example, there's a wonderful program which creates Skype conversations between teenagers in Brazil who are trying to learn English and retirees in care homes in Chicago who are lonely and have got nothing to do. And the Chicago retirees teach English to the young Brazilians using Skype and other video technologies. And they not only learn English, they create empathic bonds and they challenge their prejudices about each other's lives. And I think that's a great use of technology. There just isn't as much of that going on as there could be. And I'd like to see there be many more empathy-based video games and apps which connect us not just with people who are like us, but people who are different from us.
You mentioned earlier that you said empathy is on the decline in America. Is there anywhere in the world where it's doing well or on the rise?
That's a really interesting question. And I'm not sure I know the answer to that, but I do know that in certain countries have very high levels of empathy and they've been constant. So countries like the Netherlands and Norway, we haven't seen large declines. But in the United States, in Britain, in Australia, many countries, you've seen empathy really plummeting. And, you know, I think there are things we can do about it. I mean, in Canada, for example, they've started a fantastic empathy teaching program in schools called Roots of Empathy. And the way it works is fantastic, is they bring a baby, a real-life baby, into the classroom, and the kids adopt the baby for the year. And they sit around the baby and they start talking about the baby. Why is the baby crying? Why is the baby laughing? What's she thinking or feeling? Basically, they're trying to step into the baby's shoes, empathizing. And this program, which over 500,000 kids around the world have now done, called Roots of Empathy, increases empathy levels, increases cooperation, decreases bullying, and even increases general academic attainment. So even if empathy is in decline, I think there really is something we could do about it.
Well, it almost seems, I'm just going to put my opinion out there. I'm not sure what I'm basing this on, but it just seems like it's almost become unfashionable or unpopular to actually show concern for another person. I mean, it's almost like you're opening up a weakness or admitting that it is a weakness, or it's even just seen as a weakness.
I think there's a certain context where empathy is seen as something soft and fluffy and weak, particularly in workplaces. You know, if you work in a macho work environment, the idea of being emotionally open and vulnerable, which are keys to empathic conversation, you know, doesn't look very good. But I think on the other hand, I think there has been a great revolution in human communication, which is we're much more open, particularly men are much more open than they were just one generation ago. I mean, my dad, who's in his 80s, would very rarely talk about his emotional life, but people of my generation do it much more easily, and that makes empathic connection much more possible. So I think there are good and bad sides to it.
It seems also that there's nowhere where it's more on display, this lack of empathy, than politics or the way that we all talk about politics, or we talk about other politicians that we don't like. So it just seems, and then of course the people that support those politicians we don't like, of course we don't like them. So it just seems like it's devolved into this us against them thing in which it's almost impossible to have empathy or even cooperation.
Absolutely. I think that political partisanship is something that really kills empathy, of course, because you only care about people who've got the same views or the same political position as you do. And so there's a lot of toxic us versus them conflict, which is the opposite of empathy in politics. On the other hand, you can look around the world and see incredibly inspiring examples of empathy building in the most difficult political situations. I mean, just for example, in Israel and Palestine, there's this extraordinary organization called the Parents Circle, which brings together Palestinians and Israelis who all have something in common, which is they've all had a family member killed in the conflict. And they bring them together for conversations and story sharing, but they also run public programs. My favorite one they did was called the Hello Peace telephone line, and there was a free phone telephone number on billboards around the country, and any Israeli could call it, and they were put through on the phone line to a Palestinian stranger who they could talk to about absolutely anything for up to half an hour. Palestinians could call a number and put through to Israelis. And it's in its first 5 years of operation, over 1 million phone calls were made on the Hello Peace phone line. And just imagine if we could do that today using phone lines or online video technologies to get rich investment bankers to talk to people who've had their homes repossessed, getting politicians to actually talk to their constituents. I think we'd have an empathic revolution on our hands.
Wow. I mean, when you were describing it, I'm thinking, wow, how easy, however, it would be for it to devolve into a blame session or some other kind of heated conversation. How does it not escalate?
Sometimes it does.
Okay.
Sometimes in those Israeli and Palestinian conversations, sometimes they are arguing with each other like crazy. But in general, it tends to create a bit more understanding than you started with at the beginning and often creates friendships. In one famous example, this Israeli man started shouting at this Palestinian guy down the phone. And then by the end of it, he'd agreed to meet with a Palestinian and then regularly went to give insulin and other medicines at the border posts to this Palestinian family because they couldn't get any of these medical equipment in the refugee camps. So I think there's always hope. And there's a great piece of research in psychology. It's called contact theory. And basically the idea is if you bring together people from different backgrounds, whether it's black and white or Israelis and Palestinians, and you bring them together for conversations in conditions of rough equality, in 94% of cases, you create more empathy and understanding and challenge stereotypes and prejudices. But yes, it's true, sometimes you bring people together and they'll fight like cats and dogs.
All right.
But actually, in general, people start seeing each other as human beings.
How closely is this decline or lack of empathy related to the feeling of being powerless? I mean, we could talk about endless numbers of examples in that regard, even just from, you know, not giving money to a homeless person because you think, well, good is it going to do to, you know, international type issues. So are those tied together?
Yeah, I think there's lots of reasons for the decline of empathy. I think partly there's a sense of, is my action going to make any difference? And I think there have been times where people kind of think that it could make a difference. I mean, after the Second World War, there was a massive rise of humanitarian aid giving to developing countries coming out of Europe and the United States. It was an extraordinary shift. Now, today, there's a bit of a backlash against that, and it tends to go in waves. But we still tend to be very responsive to images and pictures and personal stories. The great problem, I think, is that a lot of what the media has done is anesthetize us to other people's suffering. So people often talk about what's called compassion fatigue or empathy fatigue. You know, you've seen so many pictures or photographs of children starving in sub-Saharan Africa, or in the end, you just kind of turn off. So I think organizations have to, who are working in these issues, have to keep sparking our empathic brains so that we keep responding and we're not just subject to fatigue. But it is an issue, and that sense of powerlessness that you mention is something that's there. And that's why I'm quite an advocate of trying to practice empathy in everyday life, even like having curiosity about strangers in the world around you. Have a conversation with a stranger once a week, whether it's the heavily tattooed woman who delivers your post or the quiet guy in the office who always eats lunch alone. And having those conversations where you get beyond superficial talk is good for our empathic health, because it's the beginning of challenging stereotypes and prejudices, which help, in a way, build a more empathic world one conversation at a time.
I'm still intrigued by the idea that Americans view ourselves, I think, as giving. And, you know, that's statistically, I think it's true in a way that we give a lot of money to charities. But at the same time, there's this decline of empathy. What do you think? Where is that disconnect?
I think that there's different ways of giving. You can give to someone because you feel sorry for them, which is what psychologists call sympathy. You know, you don't really try and step into somebody else's shoes and understand their perspective. And then, of course, there's giving from that more empathic position where you really put yourself in their position. And that tends to motivate you to, you know, not just give money, but also give time. So it is really interesting that there's still a giving culture in many ways, but there's this decline of empathy. And I think part of the explanation, you can see it through how different generations are responding. So you might see there tends to be the great increase in narcissism and fall in empathy tends to be amongst younger people, college students, for example. And it may well be that the giving is still going on from older generations. But in time, we may well see the giving decline as well. And I wouldn't be surprised if that happened.
Is this tied to people you sort of alluded to it before, that we just need to listen? I think that's, in my opinion, again, that's just a lost art form, that the ability to have a conversation is not even really there anymore, because within 1 second it turns to someone else, rather, or what someone thinks.
It turns to someone else or it turns to their phone. Right.
Yeah, right.
And I think the art of empathic listening is something on the decline, and we need to work hard to encourage it. The question is, how do you become a good empathic listener? Well, there's a lot of research on this, and what it tells us is that there's two things you need to do. If you're in a tense situation, or you're arguing with someone, or something like that, whether it's your partner or your boss, colleague at work, what you need to do is two things. One is listen out for the other person's feelings and listen out for the other person's needs. And if you do that and give the other person a chance to express their feelings and needs, maybe by asking them explicitly what they are, it's amazing how it can create connection and reduce tension. And there's a really interesting statistic related to this, which is there's a psychologist called Marshall Rosenberg, who invented something called nonviolent communication, who says what you need to do in empathic listening is not just let people express their feelings and needs, but actually try and reflect back to the other person what they've just said so they understand that you understand them. And the statistic he gives is that in labor disputes, in disputes between employers and employees, if both sides agree before they sit down to literally just repeat what the other side said before they start speaking, you reach conflict resolution 50% faster. Now, I think that's an amazing statistic that works, whether it's in the workplace or in the kitchen.
Well, you've given us a couple of examples, positive examples. Anything else give you reason for hope that we can move in the other direction from narcissism to more empathetic listening?
I think the great hope actually lies in the new science of empathy, which is that for the last couple of hundred years, we've basically been told by our cultures that we are selfish and individualistic, narcissistic creatures. But alongside our selfish inner drives, which surely exist, of course, modern neuroscience tells us that we are wired for empathy. You know, 98% of us have the ability to step into other people's shoes, wired into our brains. And I think that is a great hope for us. We are, you know, what one might call homo empathicus. And we can nurture this empathy. We need to teach empathy in schools. We need to give empathy tests for job recruitment, so we fill organizations with more emotionally intelligent and empathic beings. And I think we need to support organizations which are trying to create empathy on a mass scale, like that Parent Circle organization I mentioned that made that Hello Peace telephone line in Israel and Palestine. And I think those are all ways we can start using empathy or harnessing its power so it can change our lives from the personal level to the political level.
Well, Roman Krasnarek, thank you so much for coming on our program.
Thanks very much for having me on. It'd be great to talk to you.
Roman Krasnarek's book is called Empathy, Why It Matters and How to Get It. He's a founding faculty member of the School of Life in London and advisor to organizations such as Oxfam and the United Nations.
He's currently at work on his latest project, which is founding the Turing Empathy Museum. He plans to launch that sometime this year. For years, Milwaukee and Chris Conrad's bucket list included a world speed record in his MG Midget. But he can finally cross that off his list now. We'll learn about his place in history when Lake Effect continues on WUWM.